This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
And this morning we have a guest in studio from Murfreesboro Medical Clinic, and we'll be talking about a variety of things, but mainly focusing on pediatrics. And with us today, Dr. Shirok, and it's Dr. Jared Shirok, right? Have your last name sort of right?
Sort of right. You're close.
Close enough?
Close enough, okay. Yeah. Dr. Jared is usually.
What do kids call you? That
Dr. Jared. Yeah.
I guess let's just first start out maybe just going around the room and first tell us a little bit about what you do and introduce yourself as how kids would.
Yeah, perfect. So, I'm Dr. Jared. I'm new here as of actually August 1st. So, a year and a couple weeks now. I'm one of the newest pediatricians here at the office. And I really just focus on like outpatient, seeing kids kind of in the clinics, you know, doing your regular well checks, talking about vaccines, talking about snotty noses, and all that stuff, just kind of every day.
Yeah, I'm Stephanie Brandon. I'm the nurse manager here at the clinic and just kind of help things day to day flow nicely.
She keeps it all together.
Holds everybody together.
I wear many hats. Yes.
I'm Brandis Rakes, and I'm the director of marketing for Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
What are some of the biggest ailments going around with kids? And I would imagine with school starting back up, you're probably going to see a lot.
We've been real busy for the past couple months now. I think trying to get everybody's regular yearly checkups in, talking about keeping them up to date on vaccines, trying to prevent illnesses as we can, just making sure that they're growing and developing right and getting ready to start the school year strong.
Now, are there a lot of vaccines for children who are K through sixth grade? Is that usually when they start?
Yeah, we usually actually, we start right at birth. This that first vaccine, and then there is a series of vaccines. The bulk of them are kind of done by about 4 years old, but there is another set that starts at 11 years old, and that's starting kind of that middle school age group.
Okay. And by the way, our phone number is 615-893-1450. If you want to text any questions, just let us know. 615-893-1450. So what time of the day do y'all start seeing kids come in? I mean, do they come in before school? Is that usually a traditional thing or during school?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Some of our doctors start a little bit early. I think around 8 a.m. is probably the earliest that someone will see, well, that doctors will be in the office. But we do get kids through school. Typically this time of year, it is the, 2:30, 3:30, and they really start coming in. Trying to keep them in school as much as we can. Occasionally you have to pull your kid out of school, when it's worth it. But we try to, school's important, right? So we're trying to keep them there as much as we can.
Now, are there pediatricians at every location of MMC, or are there specific locations that parents need to go to?
Yeah, so our pediatrics department, it's the biggest department, the biggest department in MMC. So we are at every location. I'm at the South Church location. There's six of us down there. There are the bulk of them at the main location. And we do have two also over at Westlawn.
Mm-hmm. Now, if there is not a pediatrician available at the time when the parent needs to bring their child there, can they go to just any of the MMC now walk-in clinics?
So we do have the MMC walk-in clinics. They will see kids, I believe it's over 6 months of age,
yes.
Is that right? Over 6 months of age, they'll see us. They'll see the kids. And also, they have access to all of the doctors if they have questions. Mm-hmm. If it's a kid-specific thing they want kind of a second opinion on, we're always available mm-hmm. to talk to them as well.
Go
ahead.
We also have a pediatric walk-in clinic at the main location. So if your child's doctor is not available when they're sick, you can always call or walk in to the Garrison Drive location and we'll fit you in with a doctor or a nurse practitioner. And many of our physicians also offer same-day appointments. So if your kiddo wakes up sick in the morning and you call in, we can get you in with someone at whatever location. So if you typically see Dr. Jared and you call and Dr. Jared's got a full schedule, there's going to be somebody at SPK that can see you that day.
And I'm sure notes when the child returns back to school, those are always a big thing, and parents always ask for that. Is that pretty simple as well?
It's pretty easy to do, and it depends on why we saw the kid, but we can offer some good evidence-based reasoning on when it's safe to go back to school or, doing school excuses too.
And we can fax to the school if you guys need to too. So parents forget to pick up that copy, we can fax it directly to the school or daycare.
Does the school sometimes call and say, hey, so-and-so said they were by there this morning, can you fax over?
Not typically. Usually they will, you know, punt that back to the parent for them to handle. But yeah, it's simple as a parent calls in, hey, we forgot to pick that up, can you fax that over to our school? And we've got a list of all the fax numbers and can get that right over.
We had a quick question here. Somebody was asking my child's 13 years of age, and my child's doctor recommended having his tonsils removed, and I'm curious, do I need a second opinion on that, because this is his first time to ever have any type of surgical procedure. Tonsils, is that a pretty simple diagnosis there?
Yeah, so it's a great question. That really is going to be more diagnosed and kind of taken care of by our specialists. It's by the ear, nose, and throat doctors. As a pediatrician, you know, I usually will make recommendations on when it's time to get evaluated. So if the kid is snoring, if they're waking up with headaches, if they're getting strep over and over again, that's when I would sort of defer off to the ear, nose, and throat specialist, and they would sort of talk through the risks and the benefits of any procedure. So if they were looking for like a second opinion, you know, I would recommend more of like a specialist second opinion with that, because they would really, they're the ones doing the procedure and they can really answer those questions.
Mm-hmm. And we have those at MMC too.
I bet. you guys, it's wild how MMC has grown over the years. I mean, it's a one-stop shop, if you would, for patients out there of any age. It's mm-hmm. pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, our physicians, you know, as I know you know, Scott, our clinic is physician owned and managed, and our doctors really truly care about the community. So every decision that they make on expanding, going into neighborhoods, is really driven by caring for their patients. So, you know, one of the reasons that Dr. Jarrett is at Shelbyville Pike, we have that location because we saw a need, because our doctor said we have patients coming from Shelbyville, coming from Christiana, driving across town with Murfreesboro traffic can be very difficult. So we put a location there to better meet those needs, to better serve those families. So the physicians, the growth has been a direct result of the physicians caring about the community and wanting to best serve the patients that are here.
And I noticed, you know, with the new structures that MMC has, they're all built to where you can continue to grow. I mean, there's still, mm-hmm. I think, space available on South Church mm-hmm. for future growth there. Mm-hmm. But that's, I mean, that's a great idea.
Well, I believe we were told at the chamber maybe yesterday that 20 people a day move to Murfreesboro. And so the traffic probably says 50 a day. If I'm
feels like a million a day.
It feels like a million a day, but we're growing tremendously, and people need health care. You know, kids need pediatricians. We need a healthy community, so we're trying to grow to meet those needs.
And you know, since that South Church Street location first opened, that area has really grown. I mean, mm-hmm. there's entire new neighborhoods out South Church Street now.
Right. So huge growth over there on that side of town with Joby Jackson and Walmart. Now there's all kinds of restaurants and mm-hmm. you know, eateries, and I anticipate, I don't know, I'm not on the city planning, but I anticipate there'll be further growth out there. So hopefully they can give us a light right there at 231 to make getting out of our MMC South Church a little easier. Put a little bug in the mayor's
that's right.
ear about that.
Yeah, and I don't know what they're building, you know, to the right of that MMC, but they just started clearing the land there. So it,
do you know?
I do, yeah. They're putting a Wawa over there.
Oh, what now?
A Wawa.
So what's a Wawa?
I've never heard of it.
It's a wonderful gas station. I think they're based out of Pennsylvania, I want to say.
Yeah. Sounds Australian almost.
Kinda, yeah. Yes. No, we're pretty excited to have a Wawa right there.
Okay.
It must be a pretty big place in, because there's like two lots that they're clearing, I guess, all for that.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I think the out front of it is still for sale, but I know that they're planning to put a Wawa there.
So that'll be on one side, and then you take Joby Jackson down the street, and there'll soon be, what is it, Bucky's?
Oh, yeah.
So
yes, Bucky's. Like everybody's excited about Bucky's.
I know.
We're very excited.
Well, he's excited about Wawa.
Wawa's great.
Does Wawa have a mascot?
Ooh, I don't think it does. Not quite as cool as the beaver.
Yeah. Sure. Hopefully the beaver will come visit us at South Church. Ooh, yeah. Right? That'd be fun for the kids.
Like gas station heaven here in Murfreesboro. Yeah. That's right. Amazing stuff. I had another question here. This one says, will you see a child that parents have chosen to not do vaccines?
Yeah, so it's a great question. We as a clinic, we are a vaccine clinic where we do really work with the families and talk to them about sort of the risks and benefits of the vaccines. And we do have a requirement that we get caught up on vaccines at some point. There's some more details we could always hash out. Really the reasons for that is that we balance the fact that, you know, as a parent, you can make decisions. You do make decisions every day about your kid. We kind of have looked at all of the science and all of the data and know that to best protect all of the children in the clinic, that we stand pretty firmly on making sure that all the kids stay safe and keep each other safe and keep themselves safe by doing the vaccine schedule.
Is that a pretty common question, I guess, the parents have? You know, are these vaccines safe, and what age do we start? I know you said some start newborns, but do you get that question a lot?
Every day.
Yeah. Every day.
Yeah, probably like, you know, probably every single well visit, actually. It's a very common question because we understand, right? We're doing things, we're giving medicines to kids. Anytime, there's always questions, and we welcome them, right? We want questions, we want to talk about that, and we want to kind of lay out all the information, you know, as unbiased and as fair as we can.
Are there some questions that are more common than others among parents, especially parents of those who are, let's say, under the age of 12?
Questions like regarding
just in general, I guess, you know, from vaccines, like that one is obviously common if you get it every day, but what are some other ones that you typically do get?
Yeah, I think one of the big concerns is always feeding, right? It's like, is my kid eating enough? Are they growing enough? Are they eating enough? Or they just eat chicken nuggets every day? It's like, well, that's pretty normal about 2 years old. I think that's what I spend pretty decent amount of my time on, is answering those. And we do a couple different ways of going about it. You know, we'll talk about sort of what they're eating in a day, and then we'll also look at the growth charts, which sort of tracks their growth compared to average growths, and do a lot of either reassuring that their kid's growing just fine, or, you know, finding some areas for improvement where we can make some changes.
Well, it's funny you said chicken nuggets, because one of the questions was about chicken nuggets. I don't see it now. I must have. It says something to the effect of, oh, here it is. My 3-year-old refuses to eat anything but chicken nuggets.
Yep.
Should I be worried about their nutrition, or just go with it?
Just go with it probably is the answer. It's very common. Typically, 2 to 4-year-olds. I mean, they get the sort of called the yellow diet. It's like chicken
macaroni,
cheese, French fries, right? Mm-hmm. It's very, very common. You know, yes, if they ate that only that their entire life, we'd probably have some issues. But I always just encourage families, just try to have something available. You know, if there's a vegetable, have it available, right? We don't want to make mealtimes, you know, a battle. You know, if they take a bite, that's a win, right? And we just want to encourage that as much as we can. And then, sure, if they just want a chicken nugget for dinner one time, go for it.
Hey, they make those chicken nuggets that have veggies and that's stuff right. in them, too. You got to get creative a little bit with it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, if only adults could eat, you know, like that, what they want, then life would be good all the time.
Well, I mean, you can.
There's
there are consequences.
May not live that long. Now, with parents, though, especially new parents who have just one child, do they come across usually more worried, more concerned over even the smallest of things compared to that parent who has, you know, 3 kids, a well-seasoned mom or dad out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends. You know, I've seen both, right, where I've seen sort of the new parents, you know, trying to do everything right, you know, trying to answer every question, and they're just so nervous. But I've also seen parents where this is their, you know, 4th kid, and this kid's different, right? Because I always like to say, like, every body is different, and sure, they've done it 3 times, but you get that 4th one that throws you for a loop, and it can really, you know, we're here to help everybody.
Especially once they become teenagers, all kinds of loops are in the way.
So many loops.
How do we make them young again?
Right?
So when choosing a doctor, because that's one of the big things, especially when a mom's expecting that first child, I know there's a lot of moms that go out there and literally interview different doctors before they choose one. But what goes into making that decision? Because I'm sure you get questions like, you know, how do I pick my doctor for my for my child?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it, you know, first is kind of looking at the clinic setup and sort of, are, you know, if they have availability and if the scheduling is more convenient. But looking at the specific doctors, then it's really just going to be finding somebody that you mesh with, mm-hmm. right? That can kind of have a conversation with you, that can answer your questions without feeling judgmental. Sometimes parents, you know, will like to see a doctor that looks like them, right? Or they like to see a doctor of a certain gender, you know, especially if they're not a newborn, but they have like a teenage boy. They like to see a boy doctor or vice versa for a female. Mm-hmm. We do have on our website little bio videos, I think about every single one.
Every
is that
physician.
Right? Mm-hmm. Just a little tiny get to know you type thing. Mm-hmm. But then most of our doctors do also a kind of, we call it an OB consult, but really what that means is we meet with the parents, you know, while they're pregnant, and then it's just sort of a conversation, kind of just like this, just talking for 10, 15 minutes to see if we might be a good fit.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and because we have so many people who move here from other areas, I'm sure you do get a lot of questions from moms and dads who have kids who are like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, mm-hmm. and they're trying to figure out mm-hmm. what pediatrician to see. Each child is different and they have their own personality, and I can see where some personalities may work well with one doctor but not with the other, or maybe the child may have trouble explaining, you know, hey, I this is what it feels like when such and such happens or whatnot. But are you noticing that too, where every child has a very unique personality?
Oh, absolutely. And it's really fun to watch them as they hit that like 6-9 month range where their personalities really do start shining. Mm-hmm. But that is again why there's 21 of us, I think, 22 pediatricians mm-hmm. now. So we've got run the gamut of different personalities.
Yeah. I do want to circle back on the first time parents for choosing a pediatrician. One of the things that we started doing last year is around quarterly, we offer a free expecting parent event, and it's a seminar. It's held after business hours during the week, and we have 4 to 5 of our pediatricians that are there that do kind of panel question and answer sessions where, you know, new parents can come and ask questions in the audience and get to know the pediatricians. And then we have interactive learning stations set up around the clinic. So for example, Dr. Jared is really good at teaching about infant CPR and choking prevention and those kinds of things. He has I'm going to let him tell you about his technique. He has a very cool technique, a very song to teach about infant chest compressions. But do you remember what I'm talking about?
I don't think
you're going to have to sing or make up something.
Yeah, you're going to have to sing something. The song that you sang
really
that was a really great rhythm.
Oh, I'm sure it's some Taylor Swift song.
I think it
100%
was.
It is.
He's a Swiftie now.
Yeah, he's a Swiftie. We had to talk about it before he came on out here.
So those events are free. We advertise them via our e-blast, our social media. We do like for people to register just so you know they're coming, but we do door prizes. We have snacks, and it's a really good opportunity to meet some of our pediatricians that are actively taking new patients and see who kind of you vibe with. And it's a really great opportunity for people that are getting ready to step into this parenthood journey to meet other people that are in the same boat. Everybody is just as scared as they are. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what they're doing. And so what we've found is people leave there feeling a little more confident, a little less alone, and then they have kind of a better sense of like where to go from here and how to find the right doctor.
That can be a scary journey. I mean, when you're starting out as a parent and this is your first child, there's a lot of questions you're going to have all along the way. And I'm sure there's times where a mom and dad can simply call MMC and say, hey, here's what's going on. Should I bring my child in mm-hmm. or should I wait a day or so? I mean, there's questions like that probably every parent has had or has right now. But what do you get those calls about that are routine calls where you may say, you know, wait another day or so, let's see if it gets better before coming in?
Yeah, I think the most common one that I've seen even through my training in this year is always talking about, can we talk about poop on the radio?
Depending on how you say it.
Okay, we'll stick with poop. Mainly about babies and how often they're pooping. What does it look like? I think my baby might be constipated because they didn't go today. Just trying to answer some of those questions. You know, a lot of reassurance. You know, again, every body is different. Some go all the time. Some go once in a while. But that's a common one. Another common one we get is sort of the fever, stuffy nose. You know, when do I bring them in? And that's something that we do have 24/7 nurse triage available. Mm-hmm. We can always kind of go through some protocols and talk about symptoms and sort of concerning signs that we would need to see. And then again, with the sort of the walk-in clinic as well as our same-day appointments, we can always always see the baby, you know, during office hours.
Mm-hmm. And one of the great things that we offer is an app, a client portal. So when people become pediatrics patients, they can enroll their child in that patient portal, and they can essentially send a message, and somebody is checking that all the time, whether it be a nurse, and the nurse will ask the doctor. And so you can get kind of real-time communication through the portal. You can request appointments through there. You can ask those questions like, do I need to make an appointment? You know, we've got a fever of 100, you know. So that's a really good way for busy parents who are working to, instead of having to pick up the phone, wait on hold and get passed around, they can send a message directly.
And again, we're talking about Murfreesboro Medical Clinic this morning. And, you know, another cool aspect about the portal is if you're out of town, your child falls, breaks an arm, a leg, whatever it is, you're able to pull up all of their medical information yes. right there at whatever doctor's office or emergency room you're going to.
Yes.
Which is helpful, I'm sure.
Yes, very helpful for parents.
And then on top of all these helpful things, you know, when you look back at the history of MMC, was it 75 years now?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't, the parents out there did not used to have as many choices when picking out a pediatrician, mm-hmm. as an example. You had maybe one or two at
maybe.
The time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Dr. Campbell and yeah. Dr. Brown years mm-hmm. ago. There didn't used to be all these choices and opportunity, because the growth in Murfreesboro was nowhere near. We weren't growing at a pace like we are today.
Right, yeah. right.
But it's amazing how far along things have come. And speaking of how far along things have come, when it comes to technology, what has changed for pediatricians that maybe makes your job not necessarily easier, but allows for better diagnosis for different ailments of sorts?
It's a great question. I think one of the big ones is it's this website that we use. We call it kind of Dr. Google, but it's a little more than Dr. Google.
Please don't Google.
Every parent uses Dr. Google at some point.
And I invite all the questions from Dr. Google. Just don't trust that AI thing at the top. But we have a lot of access to just the wealth of information in the world. We can get it just immediately, right? And, you know, we're always checking our sources to make sure it's right. But that has been just an incredible tool, you know, not having to flip through a book and look mm-hmm. up a reference. Mm-hmm. Just to type it into our little system that we mm-hmm. use, kind of get some answers on, you know, dosing, medication, you know, recommendations, and all of that.
Mm-hmm. And this is really going to show my age, but I was in healthcare when we did not have electronic health records. Mm-hmm. And so those paper charts and just shelves and shelves of medical records that you had to, you know, rifle through, and handwritten notes and all that, like from a patient standpoint, I can tell that the doctors are really able to spend a little more time with you
yes.
because they're not having to rifle through papers.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. read handwriting
that is illegible.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that does add a certain level of, I wouldn't say fear, but concern whenever that parent is out of town and the child gets hurt or something. I mean, that's a perfect example of how great it is to have a patient portal.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. You have your records, access. All your information mm-hmm. at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. You don't have to wait.
Had another question here about ticks. Ticks, of course, mm-hmm. are huge in Tennessee, especially mm-hmm. this time of year. But the, I guess, parent was asking, how do you know the difference between a tick bite where there's something else going on, such as Lyme disease, versus a tick bite where all you have to do is pull the tick out?
Yeah, it's a great question. Tick bites and tick-borne diseases are very difficult because a lot of those symptoms can be just slow burning and you don't really notice what's wrong. Usually my approach kind of initially with a tick bite is, how long has it been there, right? What does it look like? Because we do know that it takes a bit of time for any diseases to transfer, or to be more likely to transfer. So, you know, if the tick is really big, really engorged, as we say, you know, full of blood, like, yeah, you need to go in and see a doctor. But if you catch it, you know, if you're playing in the field and you catch it that day and you're able to pull it out, you know, we're always happy to see patients as we need to. But I get much more concerned when it's been there for a while.
What do we need to look for as far as, you know, if this is a case of Lyme disease, or if it's going to turn into a case of alpha-gal syndrome or something along those lines? What do parents need to look for?
It's really tough, honestly. It's all just going to be, you know your kid best. And if something is kind of smoldering and something is wrong, like that's really where I would start, right? With alpha-gal especially, it's a little bit newer, right? So we're still learning a lot about it. But especially with Lyme disease, there's three big phases of Lyme disease, and it just depends on where they are in that. And it's the symptom, it's a very broad spectrum of symptoms, which is why it's so difficult to diagnose, because it can look like a thousand other things.
And are there any, you know, cures for those types of things, or is there only treatment available for the symptoms?
So that's a great question. It depends really on where we are, because, you know, if we're in the very early stage, where we see the rash, it's a pretty specific rash that goes along with it. We can treat with some antibiotics and kind of clear it right up. But if you're much, much farther down the pathway, it's going to be more specialist care that I really don't do in my office, where we would reach out for some help from our kind of infectious disease colleagues.
Are there any sicknesses that you're seeing an increase in? I mean, everything from leukemia to diseases born from ticks. Is there anything that you are seeing increases in?
It's a great question. I don't know if I've seen a lot in my own practice of the more kind of bigger, scary things like those. This is my hobby horse for the past couple of weeks. I have this theory running that it's been so hot outside that everyone's inside as if it's winter. So we're seeing a lot of just the common cold. I've seen COVID probably three or four times this week. And I've seen a lot of just like gastrointestinal diarrhea issues too.
So things like COVID, I mean, those are still a concern out there. Even though we don't hear as much about COVID these days, that's still something that folks can obviously get.
Yeah, absolutely. Do this without stepping in it too hard, but our COVID has sort of, it's changed since the beginning. My approach to it is very, very different than very early in the pandemic. We are still seeing cases all the time, and just as the flu can be very dangerous, COVID can be very dangerous as well. Typically nowadays, if you're in the clinic setting, there's not really a medicine that we would give to make it go away faster, but it is helpful still to know if it is COVID. So if there are, you know, longer term changes and things, that we can kind of have that knowledge to go forward and treat if we need to.
Our guest today from Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. And again, kids call you Dr. Jared.
That's right.
At the doctor's office. But if any parent has any question out there, feel free to text it in at 615-893-1450. So how do you tell the difference between the common cold and flu symptoms versus COVID?
Yeah, they look very similar. Right. I know that we still do see some of that weird loss of sense of smell and taste, but really we do testing. Right. So we have a lab at each of our locations that we can do same day testing. It takes about 10 minutes, 15 minutes if we can get the sample over to the lab, which will then tell us if it's flu or if it's COVID. We only really test for a handful of illnesses like that, because the common cold we don't test for, just because you can't change it once it's there. But we do have flu, COVID, RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, and also rapid strep testing as well.
And then those tests for COVID for children, is it the same test that they used during the COVID pandemic where they stick that little stick up your nose, if you would, that didn't feel that great?
So as we like to say, it's not the brain tickle anymore. It's a lot easier. It does go in your nose, but I always tell the kids, you know, I ask them first, like, do you ever pick your nose? And usually they don't lie to me and they say they do. It's basically that far. It's really not. It's not the old one where everyone would cry, myself included, every time they got it done.
At what age do parents need to start worrying about things that happen to all the kids out there, like puberty and all along those lines? Because I'm sure that's another question you get lots of questions about, because for every child it's a little different.
Yeah, it's a great question. Typically we start to see those, you know, we start talking about it at least at kind of the 8-year-old visit, the 9-year-old visit. We're looking for those physical signs. Also, if we start to see those signs especially early, that can happen, and that's things that your sort of yearly checkup will be monitoring for and watching for, and we can always address it if we need to. But again though, it's typically sort of 9, 10, 11. It's in boys and girls are both very different on when they start.
Well, while I'm sure you have lots of parents who are overly concerned about their child, often for things that probably they don't need to be, what about the children themselves? Do you see some kids who have almost like a medical fear of a diagnosis or worry that is a little more over the top than what it should be?
We do see that sometimes. I do see a lot of kids, especially kids that have already been in the healthcare system. I really like to talk about like medical trauma with families, especially kids who were, say they were admitted to the hospital as a young child for a breathing problem where they needed a breathing treatment or even some more invasive, you know, breathing treatments. We do see a lot of those kids be very, very nervous, right? When they're just scared like all of us, right? We don't really know what's going on sometimes. And especially if they've already had a prior complication, those kids do need kind of a lot of special attention, just to make sure that we can support them and kind of encourage them and help take care of them best we can.
Hey, and of course, something that happens at some point or another, it seems like to every child or every parent's second worst nightmare. I don't know what the first worst nightmare is, but a child swallowing something and it, you know, they can't get it out. And one of those things being pennies or quarters or little pieces of toys and things like that. What do parents need to do whenever that first occurs, as long as it's not causing a breathing hazard?
Yeah, so if a 2 or 3 year old swallows something and you see what it is, right? You see it's a penny or it's a quarter, and you aren't worried that it might be something else. I would still definitely, you know, call your doctor, right? Talk to your doctor about that, and they can sort of talk you through, is it something we can just watch? Is it something we need to send in to the, you know, GI specialist to go ahead and pull it out? But it is very, very important that if we aren't 100% sure on what it is, that we get to the doctor right away, especially if you mentioned a piece of a toy, because if there's a button battery in there, that is a medical emergency where you would need to go to the emergency room.
Batteries in general, those are obviously very dangerous for children to swallow, but what makes them so dangerous?
Yeah, and it's very different for which type of battery. So a AA battery or a AAA battery or something, that would be more dangerous from the sense of being, you know, too big and getting stuck, basically. Mm-hmm. It could get stuck in your stomach, it could get stuck in your intestines. The button batteries, which is the little kind of coin-shaped battery, those are a very, very different situation. And the reason it's an emergency is because of where the electrical current comes through the battery, your body becomes the wire, basically. So you get an electrical burn wherever that might be, and it usually, unfortunately, gets stuck in the throat, and that needs to be taken out immediately.
Over the years, what are some of the things that you've seen that are pretty common for kids to swallow?
Oh, it's everything.
Beads.
coins.
Yeah.
Crayons.
It's like not just it's not just swallowing. I've seen beads in ears.
Nose.
I've seen beads in noses. Any opening, there's something's going to go in there.
Curiosity.
Hey, let's put this in here.
Here's
what,
a spot.
What do kids say, though, whenever they do swallow something? Obviously, they shouldn't. I mean, what is the reason behind it for kids?
Oh, I rarely get a reason.
Yeah.
Usually, though, I will get an admission, right? I had a kid come in a while back, you know, this is back where I was training, but they, you know, had some ear pain, and I looked and I asked, and I saw it, and I was like, did you put something there? And she said, yeah, I did. I was like, okay, let's get it out. So oftentimes when they know it's uncomfortable and they want some help.
I mean, me as an adult, I can't imagine something being stuck in my ear. So that would really hurt, it seems like. But I guess kids, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't hurt in the beginning and then it starts to hurt, or who knows. But how dangerous is it when kids do put something like in their ear, like you're talking about here? Because we talked about swallowing stuff, but what about things that go in the ear?
Yeah, I mean, really anything in the ear can be dangerous, you know, even a Q-tip. As long as, you know, it's something that's round and soft, you know, not soft, I guess, but not going to sort of cut the ear, we still need to get it out, because long term, you can cause some infections. Same as if you get like a swimmer's ear, right? If you have something in there, that's a foreign body that needs to be taken out.
We're already out of time. I didn't realize what time it was. Dr. Jared,
it's
with
fine.
Us today from Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. Now, if anybody wants to learn more about MMC, they want to talk to a doctor, they want to set up an appointment, what's the best thing to do? Do we call? Do we go to the
Visit
website?
Visit our website, mmclinic.com. We have an online appointment request form where you can submit that form online, talk about what kind of doctor you want to see. You can request a specific doctor. If you want to learn more things about our departments, about our individual physicians, they each have a page with a video that they tell a little bit about themselves and how they practice.
And it's amazing all the information that is on the MMC website.
And they can also follow us on social media, Instagram and Facebook. We have a lot of information out there.
And that way they can keep up with all the different events or programs. programs that are coming up.
Yep.
All right. Well, we are out of time right now. We are 40 seconds away from the 9 o'clock hour. Stay with us. We do have news coming your way next.